Hello, and welcome to the Open Systems Media eCast Integrated Architecture, More Growth, Less Service Outages. I'm Kurt Schwader, your moderator, with today's speakers Taya Chiwanka and Neil LeBlanc from IBM. Today's schedule consists of about 30 minutes of presentation, leaving up to a half hour at the end of the hour for audience Q&A. Before we begin, I'd like to run down some important features of your viewing console. First is the Enlarge Slides button. This button will maximize the slides to fill your entire screen. The Download Slides button allows you to download and print the slides if you'd like a hard copy to follow along with. The button labeled Forward to a Friend enables you to send an email to someone that will include a registration link to this eCast so they can also attend. The Ask a Question text box enables you to participate in today's event. You simply type your question into the box and submit it using the Submit button. You can submit questions at any time during the material presentation, and we encourage you to do so early and often while you're looking at the material and the question is fresh in your mind. We'll address as many of these as we can during the closing Q&A, and if you have a question pertaining to the eCast operation itself, you can submit those too, and one of our technicians will be happy to respond to you during the eCast. Taya is one speaker today. She is a Carnegie Mellon University Enterprise Architect, Solution Architect, and IBM Thought Leader. She leverages her background in banking, e-commerce, Department of Defense to provide insights on proven best practices and methodologies enabled by IBM Software Group tooling solutions. Taya develops strategic and technology roadmaps specific to corporate goals, vision, and business priorities. Her success of building actionable enterprise architectures is directly attributed to the development of long-term strategies and helping business units articulate their true business priorities. Taya designs solutions to connect key enterprise domains, business, data, service-oriented, and infrastructure architecture to one source of truth repositories to ensure business and IT alignment refreshed by automation. Neil LeBlanc is a member of the product management and design team in IBM Rational. As the worldwide offering manager for the telecommunications industry, Neil plays a key role in defining and driving strategic vision and roadmap for offerings for telco. Neil is intimately familiar with the issues involved in managing large project-centered organizations. He has a history in business planning, project and portfolio management, and development, as well as implementation and deployment of packaged applications. Neil will be kicking us off today. Neil, the floor is yours.
Great. Thank you very much, Kurt. So hi, everyone, and welcome to this webcast on integrated architecture, more growth, less services outages. Although this webcast will have a bit of a telecommunications spin on it, obviously growth does apply to just about, well, actually not just about, to all industries. And, of course, the trials and tribulations that is associated to growth. I also wanted to mention that this is the first part of a two-part series. Part two will be presented actually next week on June 18th, and I'll recap that. And I think there's a link on the lobby page and so on. So we'll bring that up a little bit later on. As Kurt mentioned, my name is Neil LeBlanc, and I'm joined today by Taya Chiwanka. I think regardless of whether or not you work in the telecommunications industry, I'm sure you've seen, and again, I'm using this as an example, I'm sure you've seen and experienced some of the changes over the past 10, or 10 plus years. Just over 10 years ago, only about 15% of the world's population had access to a telephone. And around 5 years ago, nearly 70% actually had a mobile phone. Not to mention the demand for infotainment and over-the-top services, including things like video media, to be presented on devices, right, on our handheld devices. And all of that is putting some huge pressure on bandwidth and really forcing, service providers to adapt to address these demands. And it's very similar to other industries. So given the increase in the number of subscribers, given the increase in the demand for services, this has obviously opened up the door to some fierce competition. And again, if I, sort of leverage the telecommunication industry, service providers and telco in the telecom industry, as well as other companies, are really forced to look for new ways to grow and expand and gain competitive advantage. And there's a couple of ways that they've done that. Obviously, organizations are looking to offer new and innovative services in order to attract new customers. All good and said and done. But at the same time, they need to make sure that the new services that they're offering plus existing services, you know, are reliable, because they want to make sure that they can keep those existing customers. They want to make sure that, you know, they keep those customers and the revenue associated to those customers and keep them loyal, obviously. And one of the things that we have also seen over the past 10 to 15 years is that many organizations, and again, in telco, a lot of service providers have started to grow outside their home countries, right? They started to develop operations outside of their, into new territories. And just two examples that come to mind. One, there was a Russian-based service provider that had about 5 million subscribers around 10 years ago, and now they have around 220 million subscribers in 17 different markets, right? So they've really expanded, really reached out to new territories. And there was a similar provider that was based in Norway that now are in about 12 countries with 15 million subscribers, which is up from about 3 million just a few years ago. So, you know, obviously expanding into other territories, other countries, you know, can obviously create opportunity and deliver, you know, benefit. That's all based on the fact that it is done properly. You know, and some of the benefits that organizations will be able to realize, you know, include things like, you know, looking at the industry or at an industry from a broader perspective, right? So being able to see industry trends better, being able to predict results with more confidence, regardless of the industry that you're in, because you just, you have that broader view. The expansion also allows you to realize benefits around, you know, taking and taking advantage of your size and volume with things like suppliers, you know, and leveraging the value chain across businesses and geographies. And then, of course, you know, being able to leverage productivity gains. But when we say that, you know, actually there was a recent study that was conducted where, you know, IBM interviewed 49 executives in the telecommunication industry. Okay, it's not a huge study, but nonetheless, I think it still is a decent representation. And that study really indicated that only about one quarter of the communication service providers, at least those that were interviewed, believed they are successful in recognizing or realizing economies of scale. And, you know, I think one of the statistics is that, you know, about 70% agree that IT systems and infrastructure are a key area for leveraging synergies. But I think that the troubling part is that only about 33% are effective in capturing those IT systems and infrastructure synergies. So there's still, you know, a lot of work to be done out there. You know, I'm not going to spend a lot of, I won't spend too much time here, but I think we're all aware the impact that social media can have. And unfortunately, consumers will, or usually, take to social media when there is bad news, right? When, you know, there is a service outage or there is a bad service. And we all know that the bad news spreads a whole heck of a lot quicker than good news. You know, and so in organizations that expand globally and that they don't do it properly or they don't have the right infrastructure, they don't have the right IT systems, it you know, those outages, you know, are just become exponential. And it also means that bad reputation can potentially be, you know, across the globe. And I think, as I mentioned earlier, expansion delivers growth. And that's a big but, it can also increase competition, right, because you're starting to reach into new markets. And I think it also creates, you know, some operational complexities. And we're going to get into this in just a few minutes. So it creates operational complexities. As organizations expand, also the portfolio of applications and other assets can potentially become a hindrance rather than a benefit. So things such as, you know, redundant applications, redundant services, redundant components that are not properly linked can lead to outages, or it can really hinder the work that is required in order to, you know, resolve those outages. And therefore, you know, the service providers and companies, you know, really from you know, mother, well, service providers and companies from other industries really must function as a globally integrated enterprise, right, instead of a multinational organization. And what do I mean by that? When I'm talking about a globally integrated enterprise, really there's a couple of key points to take away from here. One is to, you know, rationalize the support functions, right? They need to also implement strong governance or a strong governance process, and they need to make sure that they are driving continuous improvement. You know, and with all of this, and then that's when you'll be able to start recognizing some of the benefits, which, you know, I've mentioned before, right? So leveraging the value chains, responding quickly to changing markets, greater focus and strategic initiatives, and so on. So I think, you know, just before handing over to Taya to talk about some of the infrastructure, the best practices, the framework, you know, I just want to mention one more thing. You know, according to our research, a lot of organizations, and more specifically the communication service providers, you know, they've been able to make progress in achieving, you know, economies of scale. And in some cases, you know, such as, or some of those economies in scale, such as procurement, such as network and branding. But the research also pointed out areas for further improvement related to some of the front and back end integrations. And there was actually six areas that the research had highlighted that were areas for improvement. One was being able to understand the needs of the business, the greater business, right? Stop acting in silos, but understanding the full needs of the business. Simplifying and streamlining process and operation, that was a big struggle. So again, you end up with redundant services, you ended up with redundant processes, again, because of a lack of a standardization or a standard set of standards, best best practice or framework. I think, and this is where we start getting into some of the integrated architecture, is being able to standardize and consolidate IT platforms. A lot of the redundancy has a big impact on the proficiency and the, you know, just how well things are run, and again, the services outages and so on. Improving shared service capabilities was another area. Focusing on enterprise-wide digital front office, and then globally coordinating product services and strategies. So those were the six areas where, you know, organizations had identified areas for that needed to be worked on. So with that, actually, I'd like to hand it over to Taya to talk about some of the best practices and the frameworks that we're seeing.
Hello, everyone. Hope you can hear okay. And as Neil was just talking, we were given those mandates of those six areas to concentrate on. And we can all agree that, sure, we must focus on that. But really the key question is of what a lot of our providers are asking around the world is, yes, I have this complexity. I have this ongoing demand for new services. But how do I get started in addressing this? What are some of the key roles that's needed to understand this integrated environment and make decisions on it? What are the activities of those roles and the artifacts? How do they work together in some form of a workflow? Well, we kept hearing the demand to understand not just your development operations environment, which is a big message and understanding in our platform, but really how the entire business operates from and have a clean line of sight from the strategy down to an operational component. So what you're seeing now are some of the roles that we have identified as key roles needed to improve your services and reduce the amount of outages and beat your recovery time objectives. So just kind of first going through some of those key roles is, number one, when we see these outages, we typically see a triage that are happening in the operations environment. There may be hundreds of key architects and developers and practitioners on the call trying to triage and outage, and we're focusing there. But what we want to show you is how to get beyond those tactical focus and really get more strategic about improving your resilient services and, again, reducing those outages. So, number one, with the executives and other key stakeholders in the business, we need to be able to measure. We want to understand the operational performance through every domain. We want to understand what strategies are working, what key capabilities are measuring. We want to understand the services, how those services meeting their agreements that support those different business capabilities. What about the applications that are providing those services? How are they performing? And what about the IT architecture or infrastructure that supports that application? How are they measuring? So what we want to do is we want all key levels in the first row to really measure the operational performance from the business all the way through the operation environment. And once we measure, we can, from that, we'll have an artifact of a strategy. Okay, so now we know that maybe, for example, we need to consolidate some and rationalize our application portfolio to improve the quality of our services. Okay, so that's the strategy as a result of measuring that operational performance. Okay, that's great. We understand the strategy, but meanwhile, we're seeing around the world that telco providers are seeing the increase in services at a staggering rate. I have one telco provider over in the Middle East, in Kuwait, who's really seeing going from really some instances of 90 ideas a year to that many in a month. So you know what your strategy is, but meanwhile, you have to meet this ongoing demand of services. So how do you do that? You score them, and you score them based on some key principles that you've identified for your organization. So once you score them, you may find that, wow, we still have 1,000 different capabilities or strategic initiatives that we want to take on, 100, to resolve some of our infrastructure issues or our outage issues. Well, what we want to then do is take, say, that hundreds of things that the business may have scored, the lines of business that scored, and then we want to use a compare-wise, and we want to compare those capabilities based on a set of business needs and strategies to really identify what are those top 20, for example, key strategic initiatives that we need to take on to improve those platform and services. So that's how we connect from, and that stems from that lines of business scoring. And really, that's going to produce an artifact of a business need. So that lines of business, after scoring and comparing, are going to deliver to an analyst a set of business needs. So what is the analyst's role? The analyst, that business analyst, would then take those business needs and translate them into functional and non-functional requirements. Okay? So once we've identified those requirements, maybe mapped them to a set of key projects, we understand the score, we understand how they measure up in the current state, we've really got a clear baseline of what we're trying to transition to. So now that analyst has helped with the translating business need to non-functional and functional requirement that map to a set of key projects. What we want our architects to do, a lot of times we'll go into these environments, these telco environments, and we'll see these enterprise architecture practices or solution architecture practices who are trying to understand the operational environment. But what we see there's a problem is they're trying to really boil the entire ocean by understanding all the current state. What we've been teaching our practitioners is really let's just understand enough of current state that map to that set of non-functional and functional requirements that this analyst has identified that will meet those different projects, okay? So now we're not just pulling in all those current state artifacts. We're pulling in what map to some key project and that's going to address some key strategic initiatives that we identify as a result of measuring those activities. And the next key step that we see in this workflow and this role is the portfolio analyst. Okay, so we want our different telco providers, and as Neil said earlier, it's really telco providers, banking. We all sees these demands and services and these outages in these different arenas. So we want to understand the cost, right? So when that architect pull in those different architectural components that map to those requirements, well, the key thing to point out what their role is doing, they're grouping those architectural components by patterns, okay? So patterns, I mean, what if we have a given service, maybe the service bill pay. And for that bill pay service, we have some different business and IT patterns that are needed to give that service bill pay. So we're grouping the architectural components by pattern. So the next piece that we want to be, that portfolio analyst, we want, when that role comes in, we want them to provide the cost and analyze the cost of those components that make up that pattern. So let's go back to that example of we rationalize some architectural, some application components to improve a particular service. When we go through the rationalization decision, understand the architectural impact, we can also understand the cost impact to making the changes based on those requirements. Another key role that we see that's important in reducing the number of outages is those quality analysts. You'll hear often that people say test early, test often, but what does that really mean in a practical sense? What we want our different telco providers is to start testing back in your architectural design phase. So, for example, let's say we go through a rationalization effort and we decide to rip and replace one type of database platform to a new database platform or even a service platform. Well, we want to understand the risk of making that change so we can test during our design time of test. So if I change this architectural component or I change a standard in my architectural practice, I should be testing in my design phase and virtualize or simulate that testing to see what the impact is going to be well before I get into my software development lifecycle. So before I get developers on a project and making coding changes to support a new removing a standard or consolidating an application, I can see what the impact of those changes are going to be before we even get to that SDLC lifecycle. The next role we see as very important in reducing the number of outages is your governance board. We often see when we go to our different telco providers is they'll have in their repository a lot of assets that doesn't need to be governed. And at a very simple level, we only want to see in your governance repository or your asset repository only the assets that need to be governed. So all those architectural patterns, those requirements that have those related costs in that central repository and governed by your governance board. And the beauty of that is we can understand the state of an asset, where it is improved, how many people are reusing that asset, and make sure that everybody is using the current and most approved, the current state asset and the approved asset. Additionally, what we often see is when we integrate our enterprise, sometimes the information that we have may get old or out of date. As a best practice, we've learned that when we are understanding our business and IT environment, we should leverage the ability to discover and monitor those assets and constantly discovering how they're being used, monitor them. So if we're looking at a very mature organization, how do you get to a highly managed and optimized environment? In addition to what I've just described, those key roles, you want to constantly keep your information up to date and fresh and make sure that you're making decisions off of information and assets that really represent your current state. So that's that operation analyst, really understanding that operation environment and using fresh data. So we have all this information governed. We have different roles. So we want to make sure that when we kick off and we make changes to our operation environment to reduce the number of outages, we want to try to be as agile about this as possible. So that's why we encourage, use a lot of architectural sprints. pull in this, we identify a pattern that's causing a particular outage. Let's focus on those set of patterns, map them to a sprint, a SDL sprint that we can define in a project, and then we can release those different updates to that architectural environment and that integrated environment in sprint. So every couple of weeks, you can see new changes to improve the quality of services and reduce the number of outages quickly in your environment. The next key component that we want our telco providers is we often see a lot of causes for outages in your operation environment, and sometimes people don't even understand all of the components that's in a pattern, how to integrate it. So what happens when they promote it to their production environment, they sometimes miss key components like database scripts, an ear file, or a WAR file. We want to reduce that by using deployment automation and grabbing all those key components based on, grouped by those patterns, based on the service that we provide, and so we won't miss key pieces in that integrated environment. And before I wrap up here, I wanted to let everyone see how that looks in the context of a framework. I'm not really sure if everyone can see it very well on this, but what we did was we took all those activities, that workflow I just described, those artifacts, and we grouped them in a business continuity framework, and it has a set of methods, which we're going to really get into a deep dive on the second session. But really, just quickly, what I just described was the first box is reporting and metrics. That's how you measure the operational performance. The next one is when I was discussing scorecarding, so you got those service and request demands. We want to prioritize those business continuity needs by leveraging scorecarding capabilities. The next piece, so that gives us our business continuity and ability to understand the environment. So next, getting into business operations, I was describing how the analysts get those business needs, translate them to non-functional and functional requirements. Then the architects group them based on the business and context. That's another way of saying patterns. And that way the architect can determine if I change any component in that pattern to a what-if impact, what will be the impact to that integrated environment. You saw the portfolio analyst doing impact analysis on cost. And another key component I wanted today to point out is confirmation. When we integrate these environments and we do the cost analysis and what impact, we use these great solutions to resolve these problems, but long term we want you to be able to reuse this data for other initiatives. And the way you can do that is you want to socialize what you've done with your integrated environment, and you socialize that through confirmation. Have key stakeholders, customers, and internal stakeholders give impact to some of those patterns that you use so that we can promote reuse throughout our internal environment of those different patterns. So leveraging confirmation. So we have our total quality management. I talked about that. That's with the operational testing. I wanted to point out with total quality management, like what Dr. Deming taught, we want to have quality at all levels. That's how we test early and test often, with stimulating that testing very early in the process. The next one is management and control. That's that governance role. We want to manage and control those governance components to promote reuse throughout that environment. Again, we want to then pull from our governed environment that agile project execution sprint and all of the appropriate work items that match. And last, as I described before, we want to group all those architectural components, and when we complete a project execution sprint, we want to leverage deployment automation to continuously deliver all of that those integrated components without interruption. So with the last, I'm going to quickly turn back to Neil to wrap up.
Yeah, and thanks, Tara. And as we mentioned, right, so you went through the roles and the process quite quickly, And actually, we're going to do a deeper dive. And so we're going to do a walkthrough, basically, of what you just talked about in a session that we're doing next week, in the webcast that we're doing next week. And the date is June 18th. And as mentioned, there will be a link that will be provided. So you will be able to go and register for that webcast, where we'll do a much deeper dive on the whole framework, the whole process, and so on. I think we're wanted to open it for some questions now.
Very good. Thank you very much, Neil and Taya. Now we are to the Q&A portion of the session. Let's start with a question for Neil. You mentioned that there were six areas of focus. Is there a recommendation on where to start?
I think no two organizations are alike, obviously, and it depends on the appetite. It depends on the where the pain points are, where the real pain is within an organization. But I, out of those six, I think there's two areas that we have seen that, you know, is probably a good starting point. The first one is really the understanding of the needs of the business. And I think as Taya walked through, you know, I think she talked about the scoring and the ranking of the request. But, you know, making sure that you understand the needs of the business, when you do that scoring and ranking, you're making sure that it's aligned to the business objectives, right? So when you are able to set a common, a common framework around, well, what is the most important work to be done, and you have a unified way to capture and to align those requests, I mean, I think that is a small and provides you an incremental win. So it's a win out of the gate. And I think the other area is the, maybe not as easy, but it's the standardizing and consolidating of the IT platforms. I mean, again, I think that is, you know, it's another area that will help you get, and it doesn't have to be done big bang. I mean, I think you could start with, much smaller pieces and in order to show quick wins and quick improvement.
Right, and I think, that's one of the things that when you're talking about an architecture like this, you mentioned some telecommunications examples. This is kind of new ground for the enterprise corporation world, potentially, coming from a technology angle. So I think we're getting some questions about just general things about that, and maybe you could talk a little bit about how do I know problems are happening. Like, if I'm a CEO of an organization, am I getting a monthly status report that said development stopped work for a day because of something, or marketing misinterpreted a requirement which caused a delay in the developments, et cetera, et cetera? Are those like bellwether problems that are going to point to saying, hey, I should really be worried about implementing some kind of architecture here?
I'll let you take this, but before you jump in, Taya, I mean, I think there's two different levels, right? And you mentioned if I'm a CEO, how do I know? And well, in some of the examples and in other presentations that we've done, we've had examples, and I think there was a question around, well, can you give an example of a service outage? And without naming any names, you know, over the past year, and again, if we refer back to the telecommunication industry, you open up a newspaper, or people go, what the heck's a newspaper? You get tweets, or you look at social media, and you'll see, you know, telecommunication company in Canada, complete outage as of 8 p.m. for 24 hours. Well,
right.
That, you know, is a problem, right? So I think there's different levels of problem, and maybe, Taya, you can address a little bit more of the lower level outages and so on.
Exactly. So what we do is when we, leveraging the example Neil just provided, that maybe we saw a telco provider have an outage where the entire East Coast was down. And so we can start there. So if I'm a CEO, I understand I'm having these outages. We need to group those outages and then from an architectural or integrated enterprise, pull in all of the pieces that enable that service. But most importantly, like Neil was saying, at a higher level of abstraction from that C level, how do you know you're having a problem? He doesn't necessarily need the day-to-day reports like there was a bump in the road with the requirement, but we just need to understand overall. We've identified what our business capabilities are, how are they performing, what are those measures, how do we measure them? We have a set of principles that we set of what we measure those by, and we have those different key, those business stakeholders and IT stakeholders measure those capabilities. Those capabilities are provided by certain IT services. Then we want them to measure the supporting IT services by grouping them based on the capability they provide. So once we have a measure, and then that is a way we can have our stakeholder provide a measure, but we also want our systems, our different repositories that's managing this data, is to provide measures of, for example, of your SDLC lifecycle. It's going to tell us the defect density of a particular application based on the number of work items or change requests provided by it. So we want to take all that information, roll it up to a high-level dashboard, and based on what your role is in the environment, start to take that same data and change the view of that data based on what your role is. So a C-level is going to see the highest level abstraction, and then as we drop down into the domains, the business architect is going to measure from how it's performing from a business perspective, and the IT architect is going to look at the IT score and how it's measuring up from that perspective.
I see. You also mentioned non-functional requirements and functional requirements. Can you provide a little insight into what the characteristics of a non-functional requirement are versus a functional requirement?
A non-functional requirement may be placed like a restriction on how a system will do something, like, for example, accessibility, compliance, maybe privacy, quality, reliability. So that's a non-functional. Whereas a functional requirement will be, it gives a more of the behavior of what the software, what it should do, like how a system should send email, for example. That will be an example of a functional requirement.
Okay, I see. There's a question about asset updates. So you mentioned asset updates and coordinating those kinds of things. Is there a walkthrough, or maybe this is something you actually will do in part two, do you have an example of somebody doing some kind of an update to a code repository environment or some other kind of asset and the kind of coordination you're talking to about, the architecture having to deal with, updating of those things through a distributed environment?
Absolutely. So in part two, we will actually see a demonstration of those roles that I pulled out and show how those roles in the context and day in the life will go through and perform some of those updates.
Oh, neat.
So, yes,
okay.
We will get into a deeper dive.
Okay, great. There's a question about the integrated architecture and utilization of cloud services. Let's start with Neil and Toya, please chime in here. Does the integrated architecture kind of define existing methods of, corporate services like, the emergence of using cloud architectures and cloud-based services or software as a service, infrastructure as a service? Does the architecture incorporate techniques that can be brought to bear to manage the effective communication of, cloud-based services?
Well, I was going to say yes, and then Taya, you take it away. So, but
all right,
absolutely right. Because once we integrate that architectural environment based on the patterns, what it's going to do is, because we're measuring that, we're going to be able to identify, and we have costs assigned to those different components within that pattern.
Mm-hmm.
Well, because based on the cost and the service that is provided, we'll be able to quickly identify what are candidates to go into a cloud environment or as an IBM or Blue Mix, or identify what are good services that should be on a different platform. Instead of hosting it on an internal platform, maybe we should have a piece of this pattern hosted as platform as a service. And you're able to make those decisions by measuring how they're performing, measuring the cost of the expense of you maintaining it in your environment, and compare that to what it would be to integrate it into put some of that solution in a cloud environment to improve those quality of those services.
Okay, I see. So it's not just a service outages thing. It's an actual measurements to be able to understand operational efficiencies and trade-offs to move things to the cloud or do a platform as a service too. That's
You said it even better.
Interesting. Very neat.
Yes.
I'm learning a lot, and I think the embedded industry, you talk a lot about telecommunications and enterprise. I think they're intimately familiar with these things, but, you know, embedded industries, as they grow, these companies are probably not really aware of this, but you're really kind of applying, you know, an agile framework. I like the way you postured that in your presentation to the business processes and trying to figure out, you know, where the issues and efficiencies lie. Let's see here. I guess we talked about as development organizations become more distributed. So this is more along the lines of, you know, developers, you know, developing manufacturing products. What kinds of integrated architecture techniques can be brought to bear to manage effective communication and resource sharing within that kind of, you know, microcosm of an organization?
Okay. So a part of, and what we're going to really dive into next too, so let me restate, make sure I captured, understood the question correctly. And we're managing this integrated environment. We're doing a lot of, we have a lot of roles identified. We want to be able to track how these different roles are really, I guess, really from a workflow and data measure these roles. I just want to make sure I understood your question.
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah, from a workflow in terms of just within a development organization, they're writing code, they're sharing code, they're using repositories, they're following, you know, processes.
Exactly. And in the next part, what we're going to show where dashboards are very key to really managing, because we're really simplifying a very complex scenario.
Mm-hmm.
And for example, when we're talking about these service outages, one of my telco providers, we were looking at a particular service that went out, and it wasn't meeting this recovery time objective. And they were trying to manage all these different roles in the workflow. And we found it was very complex because this one service traversed 100 different applications.
Wow.
And so many different platforms, I can't even count. So it involves so many roles just to work on this one service. So with these dashboards that's pulling across these development repositories, these portfolio and strategy management repositories, your architecture requirements, and it's pulling all that information all into one collective, one source of truth. And that's what, in part two, we show once all this information is collected and pulled together based on your role, And we always caution that it is based on your role. It's the same data being shown to you in a different way of how we're managing these workflows, where the state of these different activities of the workflow, where are we having some hiccups, and how to improve it in the next architectural sprint.
I see. Okay, great. That brings us to the conclusion of today's eCast. I want to remind everybody that we're going to roll up our sleeves in part two and really take a look at actual concrete processes and programmatic approach to what we talked about here today. Be sure to join us on the 18th for that and register on the website. Thank you very much, Taya and Neil, for sharing your expertise on integrated architecture. We at Open Systems Media and IBM also want to thank you, the audience, for attending and contributing those excellent questions remotely. This eCast will be posted online at the URL shown on your screen within 24 hours, and an audio-only podcast version will also be made available there. You can do a web search with the keywords embedded, space, e-cast, and find all of Open Systems Media eCasts available for download as MP3s. Thank you for attending, and have a great day.